pull up a chair. I want to start with a number and I want you to sit with it for a second. In the early years of flying the mail, if you signed on as an airmail pilot, the odds that you would live to see out your contract were not good. Not bad, not risky, not good. They used to say that of the first 40 men hired to fly the mail, most of them were dead inside a few years. Killed in the fog, killed in the mountains, killed flying a load of letters into a hillside they never saw coming. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar. And today I want to tell you about a quiet, mild-mannered fellow from Louisiana who looked at those odds, decided he'd rather not die, and to keep himself alive he started writing things down in a little black notebook that cost him about a dime. That notebook is the reason you and I are still flying today, because that notebook became Jeppesen charts. And if you have ever shot an instrument approach in your life, you have held that man's work in your hands. His name was Elry Borge Jeppesen. The pilots just called him Jep. Now, before I get rolling, let me tell you today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. And you know, I got to thinking about that instrument rating coin while I was putting the story together, because the instrument rating is the one that Jep's whole life made possible. Every one of those coins tells a story. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Go have a look at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's go back. Jep was born in 1907 down in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Just a kid when the flying bug bit him, and it bit him hard. He scraped together enough to fly, and like a lot of young men in the 1920s, he learned the trade the only way there was to learn it back then. He barnstormed, flew a Curtis Jenny around the country with a flying circus, hopping passengers for a couple dollars a ride, sleeping under the wing, chasing good weather and dodging bad. Back when avgas was cheap and airspace was free, that was how you built time. Nobody handed you a syllabus. You went out, you flew, and you learned what the airplane and the weather would let you get away with. And you paid attention to the fellows who didn't come back, and you tried to figure out what they'd done wrong so you wouldn't do it too. Then around 1930, Jep got what looked like the best job in aviation. He hired on to fly the mail. Now here's where it gets interesting. Flying the mail sounded glamorous. The airmail pilot was the rock star of the sky in those days. Leather jacket, white scarf, the whole picture. But I want you to understand what the job actually was, because the picture and the reality were two very different animals. The contract said the mail flies. Rain, snow, fog, night, mountains, it did not matter. The mail flies. There were no navigation aids to speak of. There was no radar. There was no controller watching over you. There were a string of bonfires and later some light beacons on towers, and when the weather closed in and you couldn't see those, you were on your own with a compass, a watch, and your own nerve. Jep drew one of the meanest stretches of that whole system. The run out west, through the high country, Oakland, Salt Lake, Cheyenne, mountains that reached up into the clouds and waited for you. And in the winter, that country would sock in solid for days. Picture the cockpit, open most of the time in the early ships. The cold coming through your boots. The smell of hot oil and exhaust and wet leather. Wind screaming past your ears so loud you couldn't hear yourself think. And out ahead of you, nothing. Gray. Just gray. And somewhere in that gray was a ridge line. And you had better know exactly where it was, because the first time you found it with the airplane was the last time you found anything. Jep watched his friends die. That's the part that doesn't make the leather jacket photographs. These were men he ate breakfast with, and one by one the mountains took them. He would tell people later in that flat, honest way of his that he simply decided he was not going to be one of them. He was going to be the pilot who came home. And the way he chose to do it was not with more nerve. It was with a pencil. Jep went out and bought himself a little loose-leaf notebook. Cost him about 10 cents, and he started writing down every single thing about that route that might one day keep him alive. Field elevations. The exact height of every airport he might have to drop into, so that when he came down through the murk, he knew precisely how much air was underneath him. The heights of the hills, the heights of the ridges, where the valleys ran, and which way they drained, where a fellow could sneak through a pass if he had to, and where a pass would dead-end him into a wall of granite. He wrote down the obstructions, towers, smokestacks, high-tension wires, the tall trees, the barn on the hilltop. And here's the part I love, because this is a real pilot doing real work. When Jep didn't know how tall something was, he didn't guess. He went and measured it. He would climb the hill himself, on foot, on his day off. With a barometric altimeter in his hand, he would climb up to the top of a ridge or hike out to the base of a smokestack, take his reading, work out the height, and write it in the book. He measured the world by walking up it, because his life on a foggy night 3 weeks later was going to depend on that number being right. He drew pictures, too. Little profile sketches. The shape of the terrain coming into a field so he could see in his mind's eye what he could not see with his eyes. What we would call today a terrain profile on an approach plate. Jep was inventing with a pencil on a male pilot's day off, because nobody else had ever bothered to make one. And he did one more thing that tells you everything about the man. He wrote down phone numbers, farmers, ranchers, the fellow who ran the general store out by the edge of a field, people who lived under his route, so that before he launched into weather, he could get to a telephone, ring up a rancher in some valley 200 miles ahead, and ask him, plain as day, what's the sky doing over your place right now? Can you see the stars? Is the fog down in the bottoms? That was his weather service, real people on a party line looking up out their front door. There wasn't any other kind. So Jep's got this black book now, and it is filling up, and it is working. He's making it home when the weather is rotten, because he knows where the rocks are, and he knows where the holes are, and he has taken all the guessing and turned it into knowing. Well, pilots talk, always have, and word got around the ready rooms that Jep had this book, and the other male pilots, the ones flying the same killing route, they started coming to him. Hey Jep, let me see your book. Jep, what's the field elevation at such and such? Jep, how tall's that ridge on the north side? And at first he just showed them, but there were only so many hours in a day, and a fellow can only copy so many pages by hand. So somewhere around 1934, Jep did the thing that changed aviation forever, and I don't think he had any idea he was doing it. He started selling copies of the book. $10, that's what he charged. $10 for a copy of his hard-won, hand-measured, life-saving little manual, he called it, eventually, the Airway Manual. And that $10 black book, sold pilot to pilot, out of the goodness and the good business sense of one careful man, is the seed of the entire Jeppesen Company. Think about that arc for a second. Set it in your mind. One pilot, refusing to die, walking up hills with a barometer, and out of that grows a company that would eventually chart the whole planet. Every airway, every approach, every airport, the whole sky, drawn and measured and kept current, so that the pilots who came after would not have to learn it the way Jep learned it, one dead friend at a time. He set up shop in Denver, married a gal named Nadine, a stewardess, back when they called them stewardesses, and she worked right alongside him building the thing up, and the business grew because the product was honest. When you bought a Jeppesen chart, you were buying a promise that a professional had checked the number, and that when they revised it, they'd send you the new page so you'd never be flying yesterday's information into today's mountain. Now I want to bring this home to you and me, because this is not just a nice old story about a fellow with a notebook. If you fly instruments, you have flown Jeps. That's what everybody calls them. Jeps, that approach plate on your yoke clip or on the glass in front of you now, with a profile view down at the bottom showing you the step downs and the terrain and the missed approach climb, Jep invented that way of seeing. The idea that you draw the approach as a picture from the side so a pilot descending blind can see in his mind exactly what the ground is doing underneath him, that came from a man sketching ridgelines so he wouldn't hit them. And I'll be honest with you, this is one of those places where I get a little grumpy about the modern world, and then I catch myself. Because I'll grumble at these kids today, just punch it up on the screen, and the magenta line does the thinking. But then I remember that magenta line, that beautiful moving map that keeps your family safe, is standing on the shoulders of a male pilot who measured a smokestack by hand, because he loved living, and he loved flying, and he was not willing to give up either one. The tools got better. The job Jep was doing never changed. Know where the rocks are. Come home. Elri Jeppesen flew the mail. He flew for the airline for years after. And he passed on in 1996, an old man who had seen his 10-cent notebook turn into charts carried in cockpits all over the earth. And here's the tribute I like best. If you fly into Denver today, into that big airport with the white peaked roof out on the plains, the main terminal has a name. It is the Elri B. Jeppesen Terminal. There's a statue of him in there. Thousands of travelers walk past it every day with their roller bags, never knowing that the fellow in bronze is the reason their pilot could find the runway in the weather that morning. You know it though, now you do. So next time you clip a plate to the yoke, or you thumb up an approach on the screen, and that profile view comes up with a little sawtooth terrain along the bottom, give a quiet nod to Captain Jep, a barnstormer from Lake Charles who decided the mountains weren't going to get him, and wrote it all down so they wouldn't get you either. My thanks to the folks who've kept his history alive, the Jeppesen Company's own archives, and the airmail histories out of the Smithsonian and the Postal Service records. For the details in tonight's story, there's more where this came from, over at radiohangar.com if you want to sit a while longer. That's the hour. Fly like Jep. know where the rocks are, and always leave yourself a way home. I'll see you next time.